Thanks very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. From all the responses that are relating to POPs, we will take the one matter up at the DG level with the SARS, and further to that, the MTF process of continuing to enhance, that is, public water policy. It is in that particular structured project plan. We will also continue to implement it. Maybe that's just the last addition by General Mawela. Thank you.
Thank you, National Commissioner. Honorable Chair, honorable members, I now have the figures of trained first aid operators within public water policy. 53 members are trained at level 1 and 2, and 50 trained at level 3. And one last reform which I omitted to can inform the committee, one of the recommendations of Falam Commission, it was that public order policy must be commanded and managed by members who are currently trained in public order. Honorable members will recall that we reported previously, but I feel I must reemphasize that as we speak now, POP is commanded by Major General Zef Ukwanazi, who is the current public order police member, assisted by Brigadier Ali, also a trained public order member, and also assisted by Brigadier Mukari, who is also a current and trained public order policeman.
Thank you for that, General Mawela. General Sitoli, you're welcome.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. General Mawela, we just told the last part with training of public order.
Thanks, General. Thanks, Honorable Chair. The training on first aid, all in all, after the recommendations by the Falam Commission, to date, we trained 12,000 members, and it talked to the three levels. But also to say, within basic training, all members that are undergoing basic training, the curricula includes first aid training, and also on the issue of POP members, for the past two financial years, the 6,000 members who underwent basic training were all trained on crowd management for a period of 3 weeks. So they do have a capacity to also deal with issues of public order policing whenever the need arises. Thank you, General.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. We have grouped all the questions that are relating to targets, and the Major General Rabi is going to respond to them. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, yeah, just to explain, I think there were two or three questions raised about the crime targets, how do we determine them, and why do we have variances in terms of the different categories, and some going up, some going down. What is critical, Chair, is that the crime targets are primarily set within the MTSF. Within the MTSF, for instance, your serious crime target was a 2% year-on-year reduction over the five-year period. Now, what we do is the trends over the three-year period, the previous 3 years, the last year there has not been, that we have not yet reported on, and the current year that we are in. So for the previous or the first 3 years of the previous of the current MTSF, we take into consideration the levels of crime that were recorded and also the variances, whether it's going up or down. It is correct that in the first 3 years we have not achieved the targets in certain crime categories, but that does not mean that there was not a reduction. For instance, in the previous financial year, or 2 years ago, not the 17-18, in the 16-17 financial year, we did not achieve the target of 2.48%, but there was a reduction of 1.8%. So that is then taken into consideration, and we use a statistical method referred to as linear programming, where we look at the 3-year trends, And then in the last financial year, the one that has just passed, at the time when we were going through the process to set the targets, we look at the performance of the SAPs over a period of 9 months. And that methodology is applied to all the crime categories. Now, you will note that, for instance, if we look at that serious crime, we made a prediction at the time, or an estimate based on the 9 month trend. And I trust the committee will understand that I cannot now announce what the reduction in crime was for the previous financial year, because it still needs to go through the verification processes. But it was significantly better than the target that we set of 3.14%. Now, the implication of that is that it takes pressure off in terms of the remaining years because of the MTSF target that we set. So based on that, if you look at serious crime, we, with a 2% reduction that we can commit to in the current financial year, we will achieve the set target that is calculated over the MTSF period. Now, unfortunately, as I previously indicated, Chair D, that was not we had varying levels of success when it comes to different categories of crime. Contact crime was problematic. And contact crime, we over the past 3 years, and even in the year that has just gone by, the 2017-18 financial year, we have not achieved the target as contact crime. Now, contact crime is a subcategory of serious crime. Serious crime, we've achieved the targets. And the main contributors to that is the property crime category and the other serious crime category. The bulk of serious crime, if you look at the numbers, the bulk of serious crime lies within the property crime environment, and there we've done quite well and we've achieved the targets. Crimes against women, there's five crimes in the crimes against women category and five contact crimes in the crimes against children category. In both of them, we haven't done well, and that is by implication now we are sitting with higher targets to be achieved in the last financial year to make up for the underperformance in the previous financial year to get to the MTSF targets. So in short, what we do take into consideration, there was also the question, do we consult with the Department of Justice on when we set targets? Now, did the role or the consultation or the discussions with the Department of Justice is more relevant to the detective environment, where you talk about taking crime to the court or into the criminal justice system. But as far as the pure prevention part is concerned that we are referring to here, it is based on estimates and analytical methodology to determine what the targets needs to be set over the five-year period. So I hope, because of now the varying successes in the different crime categories, that's why you have varying targets when you look at the subcategories of crime. So what we have committed to, if we achieve the targets that are set there, the 2% for serious and the 7.3% for contact crime, if we do achieve that, then we will meet the MTSF commitment. Now, we agreed also as SAPS, Chair, that we will not set a target that is lower. Statistically, if you look at something like serious crime, we could have set a target lower than 2% and still achieve the MTSF commitment. But as SAPS, we decided not to set for any financial year a target that is lower in this for serious crime that is lower than the committed 2%. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, General Robbie. General Sitoli?
Yeah, thanks, Honorable Chair. Maybe just the last thing to add is to say we do interact with justice in the criminal justice cluster. That's where we discuss the link of the investigation to the prevention. But we then also put more emphasis on it. Then the loss of state firearms and all the cluster questions that relate to the firearms, I'll give General Masia, I'm sure General Skete will also add, and General Roma. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. The question that was asked on firearms, the first one, is the number of SAPS-owned firearms that are stolen in the SAP 13. That was the first question. How do we mitigate the loss? What we are doing, we have level inspections 1 and 2 at the police station where the visible policing commander inspects the SAP 13 on a daily basis
to ensure that those firearms are not lost, and the station commander does the level 2 on a weekly basis. Further than that, where the fire, where we foresee that our security is not up to standard, we intensify our physical security on the safes where our SAP 13 firearms are, and where we keep all the exhibit. Other than that, we have a planned and unplanned inspections from the divisions that we conduct at the stations to ensure that they are keeping these firearms safe in the SAP 13. The other question, it was the theft of SAPS firearms. Mm-hmm. Now, these are the firearms that are lost from the members or otherwise. What we have done, the number was requested, what number was lost or stolen from the SAPS, and this question was coupled as well with the one on the centralized storages. Yes, we have identified 9 centralized storages in all the provinces, and these storages, we have as well set a standard in terms of security in those storages. So we are going to employ the utilization of these storages immediately when we have up our standard of security at the storages. With the number of these firearms that were stolen at the SAPS, currently we are standing at 653 firearms. The other question was pertaining to escapes. What is the number up to this far for 2017-18? And what is the misconduct status of the cases that were opened? We are having 315 misconduct cases that were opened, and currently we have finalized 248 out of that 315. The guilty, we are having 137. Not guilty, 111. The fines, it's 2. Cancelling, we've got 4. Dismissal, we have 1. Verbal, it's 2. And the written warnings, we have 46 cases. The final written warning, we have 56 cases. Suspended without pay, we've got 12 members who are suspended. The cases where the offense was withdrawn, we've got 14. And currently we are having 3 pending cases in terms of the escapes.
Yeah, just a moment. Honourable Mula also raised their hand. Sorry, General Masia, just a moment. Honourable Barnard, Honourable Groenewald, in that order. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. The station commanders do their job. What do you do with the station commanders who are not doing their job because firearms are stolen at their watch? Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Kola Barnard.
Yeah, it's just a reference to this business of members found guilty of being involved with the escape of detainees. You found 137 of them guilty, and you only dismissed 1. So there are 136 members guilty of letting criminals or potential criminals go out of the cells, and they're still in the SAPs. I absolutely fail to understand your reasoning for not throwing them out the SAPs. One person, all of these found guilty, and you only kick one out. What were they? I can't imagine what the excuse could be. Please enlighten me.
Honourable Groenewald, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. That's very important, Chair, because that is part of the problem, that we find people guilty and... But my other question, Chairperson, is on the stolen and lost firearms. How many were stolen? Yeah. How many were lost? And of those lost, what disciplinary actions have been taken? As far as that, and he said, as we speak, are we talking this 653? Is it from the beginning of this financial year, beginning of the calendar year? What are we talking about? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Members. General Masia.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. The issue of the station commanders who are where we experience the loss of firearms, I don't have exactly the numbers, how did we deal with them, but the committee will remember that during last year at Mitchell's Plain and at the other station where the firearms were lost, we took steps against those station commanders. So I don't have case by case to give you clarity how did we deal with them. But where the station commander, it is found that the station commander has done something wrong, obviously a misconduct is registered and he is facing consequences. Thank you. Honorable caller Bernard, the 136 that is still serving in the police, this is a disciplinary case matter, and General Ngwenya will assist me with that one. On the issue of the 653 firearms, it is a figure for the financial year. However, I cannot distinguish between the stolen and the lost currently. Can I submit it when I have distinguished the lost and the stolen firearms out of the 653? Thank you.
There's two follow-ups, Honorable Mula, Honorable...
What does she say is the previous calendar year, financial year?
17, 18. Honorable Mula, follow up on that response, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. General Mafia, when was the last time you were doing the unannounced visit to the station, or the announced visit to the station?
Thank you, Honorable Mula. General?
Honorable Mula, the last time we did the planned visit to the stations, it was during September and October, and we visited from the division. We visited 63 stations during that time. And the unannounced visit, that figure I don't have, because we decide upon the station immediately and then we just go to the station. So I will be able to give you that figure because we did those unannounced visits prior to September. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks very much, Honorable Chair. Yeah, just to add on the action against the station commanders, this is also linked to the performance management system. So there's also going to be performance management consequence that will be led to this. I've also instructed General Ngwenya to operationalize the conduct committee, because in the conduct committee, that's where we look at the reports of the presiding officers, where they have decided how a trial is exposed. If we're not satisfied with the outcome, we'll also deal with it at the level of the conduct committee, so that we do not come here and answer questions. We've got too many guilty versions, but maybe people are still in the organization and all that. So the conduct committee is going to be dealing with that. It's one of the instructions that I have personally given that are going to complement this particular subject. General Ngwenya wants to add.
Thanks, General. Also to say the misconduct is dealt with in terms of the discipline regulations of 2017, whereby the loss of a firearm is cited under the nature of misconduct under 5-4-Y, that is any contravention of a Firearms Control Act. Then what happens once the incident has been reported, an officer will be appointed to investigate. And then every case is dealt with in terms of its merits. The outcome of the investigation will indicate as to whether it necessitates that we further proceed. And during the disciplinary proceedings, the outcome will be informed by the proceedings, whereby also there will be a representative and also the issues of the labor relations law comes in. But every case will have dealt with as required in terms of the discipline regulations of 2017. We will go back in terms of these particular cases. We, if given an opportunity, we can come back to present on each case. What was it? What did it entail, and what was the income? We can make the information available. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, General Masia.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. The other question was whether the CSR environment has moved from the building where the committee visited. The CFR didn't move. We are still housed at the Veritas building. But there are plans that are made by the National Commissioner to move the CFR out of that building. The backlog on the firearms applications, at the end of February 2018, we have received 25,717 applications. We have brought forward 92,767 applications. We have concluded 35,090 applications. Currently, we have an outstanding of from February of 83,394. These applications include the competency certificate, everything that pertains to the firearms. So we are standing at 83,394. The hand grab situation at Koster, I just requested the information from the Provincial Commissioner, Lieutenant General Muzonyane, so I will get that information and come back. However, what we have done to activate the Act, we have sent out guidelines on how the members must deal with the grab, the land grab issue, and we have as well trained, made workshop for the members through the legal services. I remember last year we had the same issue, Honorable Groenewald, and that's when we emphasized the issue of the Act, and we have trained the members on how to deal with this issue. Thank you.
Yes, Honorable Groenewald, to follow up.
Thank you, Jay. Jay, you see, this is part of the problem which we have here at the committee. As the general just said, I know I raised it last year. And after that, they've taken certain steps. But still, it happens that the people don't know what to do. So what do we say? We have notices giving out. We train the people. We have workshops. But in reality, the problem is not solved. So really, what is then the real problem? But because, I mean, if you had, for instance, all your cluster commanders together, and you workshop them. I mean, it's not that difficult. They will understand what to do. And then, of course, from where they can get all their station commanders. How long does it take? That is the problem. What I don't think the real problem is necessarily that the station commanders doesn't know what to do, or they don't know what to do. It's a matter of, do we have enough resources to deal with land grabs? Let me put it that way then, please.
Yeah, maybe just add to that. I saw last week or the previous week the 2017 National Instruction. I think it's an excellent document. Maybe members of the committee must also get a copy because it spells it out from A to Z in the different scenarios. But the reality is, you know, say for instance, a shift commander who's confronted with such a situation. Can he, for example, phone the legal office in the province, or, you know, what, maybe just what is the backup, you know, because I don't think the constable maybe at station level has read through that instruction, because it will, you know, you must apply your, you know, discretion in some instances whether you can act or not. So maybe can you just maybe elaborate on that? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Yes, we do have on a 24-hour basis the legal services people who are on standby for the members. And at the station, they do have the legal advisors whom they can phone and can get advice on how to deal with these matters. So as for the issue of Koster, as I've said, I just asked the provincial commissioner to indicate to me what went wrong and what steps are going to be taken. So I'm just waiting for that information. It is really disturbing and disappointing, Honorable Chair, that our members knows everything, but the execution part or the implementation is the problem. So we will make a follow-up on this and check what exactly are they, don't they understand, and what inhibits the implementation. Furthermore, at the police stations, you find that, Honorable Groenewald, as you are asking, do we have capacity? We don't have a dedicated capacity that can deal with the land grab issues. The capacity complaints in the client service center. So if they are still busy at the murder case, for an example, and they must go there, they must finalize the murder and still go and attend the land grab issue. So we don't have a dedicated capacity to deal with it.
Honorable Groenewald,
what has just been said, it's very, very serious. We don't have the capacity. It's a huge problem. So, General, you've got many problems, but this is a huge one. Maybe, Jefferson, we should ask my honorable colleague, as long as we are from my side, that he must attend the workshop to let the police understand what's going to happen with land grab.
But I mean, that's the important thing. The police are confronted with political issues. That's not really their domain. Mm-hmm. So the political parties must solve it. Honorable Bele, and then Honorable Slongu. Yes.
Thanks, Chair. On that point and on the response by the General, given or taking into account what was said previously about the constraints that are facing the environment, but is that not a POP issue? I mean, that's the first thing I would think of. So that, in theory, is the dedicated capacity to deal with the land grab issue.
On Muslongo, on the same issue, thank you.
No, very good, my gentleman. No, I'll speak a lot. I must say that because I think it's important for one to demystify this. Because genuine issues get hijacked by criminals at times. We agitated people on land occupation to bring the matter. Let me explain. To bring the matter on the spotlight, on the demand of our people.
But finally, we have reached consensus with the government, and the government has actually then this matter has gone through parliamentary process, whereby the Constitutional Review Committee is right now seized with the matter. When we were agitating for land occupation as a way of conscientization of our own people, there were very, very minimal land occupations that took place at that time. It is up to South Africans to rethink and reevaluate, just like the days when we formed UDF. When we started forming UDF, other people started now forcing people to drink oil and all that. So that all that is going to be put on the shoulders of UDF. And those people who are doing that have come out to the open after Winnie has passed on to say they were actually involved in all these dirty works. We cannot actually agitate to conscientize our people. And then finally, being only 24 in Parliament, you have now the government saying here is the constitutional review process. Parliament adopts the process. On the eve of that, even Cape Town is burning. Mind yourselves, police must do their work, not to hide behind, even within their own ranks, some of the people who are orchestrating disinformation on this. Criminals are just criminals. We are not involved, because at the end of the day, I've been listening very clearly, even to the outcries, even by British people, who finally actually created a mess even with Mandela family. Now, why are they having such a big interest on land reform in South Africa? Do you think they will rest when they are busy destroying countries in the Middle East? Is South Africa immune from the global geopolitical politics that are taking place? We are not. But we don't want to make political statements. But we're clear of what is happening here. Thank you.
Thank you, members. Let's move on. General?
Yeah, Honorable Chair, thanks very much. Maybe straightforward, I'm going to instruct management intervention to get into this area. And General Skete is noting. Two, we already have a national instruction. The implementation of this national instruction in the progress reporting will be escalated to the executive until such time that this particular situation is stabilized. We will also link visible policing and operation and response for the activation of level 1 and level 2 public order support to this particular matter. We're also going to link it to the migration of resources because we will be guided by what are the prevalent hotspots in the land grab and what is the capacity of those police stations to respond to this particular matter. In future, we'll be able to provide progress. It's a matter of the correct application of the laws. That's how we're going to handle it. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Just a moment. Thank you, General Sitola. I think that approach is the committee will support it. Yes, General Khanova.
Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Khanova.
Yes, as you said.
It's a long day.
Well, I've been a corporal as well, Jefferson, so don't worry. Now, what I want to say, Jefferson, you had a good interview in the newspaper report. And I want to ask on the issue of the land grab, that maybe the committee just put a short note for all the members to have, also referring to what instruction 7 or whatever, that we do have it, because it's going to escalate, Chairperson. And I don't want to do a discussion now with my honourable colleague here, but we will sort it out outside of the room.
Yeah, you bet.
Then the public order 2 option would be in play. But generally, welcome to go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Just in addition, the movement of the firearm from the building to that other building, I've given an ultimatum instruction, and it's not only building, they are top three. It's firearm, it's protection and security Free State, and it's protection and security Northwest. I've already given the marching orders in the National Management Forum at an executive. And I think General Skett started moving on the matter because firstly, the firearms themselves are a priority, but our priority number one is the members, if that building can collapse. And two, it's also working conditions. I said we're not going to negotiate it. I want progress. Further to that, I have an engagement with a new DG of Public Works, and it was very interesting. There's a lot of new positions there. Yeah, and everyone was introducing himself and new brooms. They promised to sweep clean on all these matters. The only unfortunate thing is that everything we did together with them is now starting from scratch. But we agreed to give them the opportunity, but they are also assisting us on this particular matter. So I'm going to monitor it. I think they will be reporting directly to me until we've resolved it. Then, moving forward, there was a suggestion by the honorable member, the outdated bulletproof vest. Firstly, I wanted to say the research continues. And two, I issued instructions myself, but I also discussed this in the form of direction of the organization. A demand must be created by the operatives. Support responds to the demand. And support does not decide whether the demand must be met or not, but support will rather indicate there's no funds to meet the demand, but they will report that to me as the accounting officer. Then I would give direction what we do. If we do not scratch other funds, depending on the prominence of the matter, we then approach Treasury. And if we don't come right with Treasury, we divert via the Minister to Cabinet. But that instruction has been clear. The operatives have taken their place. They create the demand. We moving forward, the percentage reduction of crime and firearms, I think firstly the honorable member has got a point and is right. It's a kind of an approach that we also want to change, because if we lost 100 firearms and we reduce them with that particular percentage, so the percentage remaining will still fire. And the possession of firearms is a risk of life. So I take the point. I will consider, we will get into a discussion so that we see how do we turn it around. And thank you for the response. The situation of the reservist, I will afford this point the opportunity first with your permission.
Thank you, General.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We are having 11,098 reservists in the country. And the last question for me, it was the police stations, the CPFs at the police stations. Why do we have stations that are not having CPF that are functional? We are having 5 stations in the country where we don't have CPFs. In the Eastern Cape, we've got 1 station, the Kopis Drift. In Gauteng, we've got Villeria. In Northwest, we have Mokopong. And in Northern Cape, we've got Butsa. These stations are the farming community stations. So the farm workers at the station, at these areas, they don't want to be involved in the CPF. But we'll keep on following it, because at the other areas like Mokopong, we have introduced the Rural Safety Committee that is working in line as the CPF. So we are going to introduce that to the other areas as well. Thanks.
Thank you. General?
Yeah, thanks, sir. Maybe on this particular matter, I wanted to suggest, first I want to remove the word impossible. It's not impossible. But two, we've just formalized the community policing strategy. These particular stations, they're going to be top of the agenda of that particular strategy. We will be looking at what mechanism that can talk to community policing involvement that can replace or serve the interest of community policing, because there's not one cut and dry criteria across that is the country. And where you are unable to implement community policing in the form of CPF according to the CPF criteria, you also resort to sector policing that is criteria. I wanted to then suggest that we have be afforded an opportunity to look at a mechanisms that will talk to these particular 5 stations. By the time we report on the community policing strategy, these stations will be on the front line.
Just in a moment, General Sithole, Honorable Groenewald.
Thank you, Chair. On the reservist coming back, we've received the number now. Just to refresh my mind, I think we have less than we had the previous year. Yes, that's right. So I'm not clear, Chairperson. Are we still have an intake of reservists? Why did we have now a decrease in numbers? Just to give the figures, not what I want to know the whole situation, please.
Thank you, Honourable Member. General Messia.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Yes, our numbers have decreased since the previous years, and we are having an intake of reservists. And currently, there are those who are in training.
The big question would be, what's the numbers that's in training? I mean, that do we know that currently?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The honorable members will recall we indicated in the last financial year that we were going to be enlisting 2,600. I can't remember the odd numbers. Up to so far, we managed to enlist, and the process that we are busy with is training. There are areas where the reservists have already been trained, and as and when they are required, they are able to deliver on those areas. General Mkhwanazi might be in a position to talk to particular of areas where we were able to already exhaust the training levels, and we will also be enlisting. And maybe also to talk to the Honourable Chair, the issue that was raised by Honourable Groenewald regarding the psychometric test. What we're doing for the reservists, we do the basic trace inventory, which entails that we check the personality test of the big five personality traits, which talks to neuroticism, conscientiousness, agreeableness, etc. We only look at those by reason that reservists already have been exposed to the operational environment. So the psychometric test that they are subjected to is different from the one where we are subjecting those who are to enter the service for the very first time, the trainees.
Thank you, Chair. I won't labor this thing anymore, but just in short, I have no problem with psychometric testing. In fact, I'm in favor of that. The issue about that was that you had already a number of reservists in the police, and then they had to do psychometric tests. So you can't just turn around and say, no, you've been in the service for 10 or 12 years, but now you cannot continue because of the psychometric test. If you have new enlistments, yes, I understand. But that aside, my question is, Chairperson, my last question on this. Is there a specific campaign towards the community trying, and I know there's a long list of conditions, or can I say preconditions and things you have to comply to. For instance, you're not allowed to have a tattoo in a certain place, and I don't know all that sort of things. I have no problem with that. But my question still remains, do the police services have a specific campaign trying to get people, because I know of a lot of people, reservists that have been for more than 10 years, not receiving any pay for their service, but now they've just disappeared, and we don't get new people. That's why we have the decreases in the numbers.
Thank you, Member. General Sitole.
Yeah, thanks very much, Honorable Chair. Maybe it's rather important to say how we're moving forward in terms of directing this process. The structured implementation plan of the police on reservists, it's going to be presented with the progress fed to me. The campaign will make sure that it's factored as part of the implementation. But then again, this particular plan for the recruitment of reservists, we're not necessarily going to divorce it from the community-based approach of the recruitment that is a strategy. But we'll also then link it to the community outreach within community policing, so that by the time we come back here, we talk of a tangible progress. And that should also then talk to these particular numbers. So that's what we're going to do.
Thank you, General. Let's go to the other responses.
What I recorded as the last question was the replacement of General Mkhwanazi.
In case.
The first response, I have formally instructed the development and implementation of the succession plan for the organization. And the succession plan address short, medium, and long-term succession. And all the managers and the members within the succession plan have got an obligation to develop mental capacity. And General Mkhwanazi is one of those. He has already started duplicating himself within the organization through the sharing of experience. is not the only one. The instruction is that all of us. We also do not anticipate the country to struggle tomorrow with regard to a search regarding who the national commissioner would be, who the divisional commissioners would be. We must have readily available capacity. And General Mkhwanazi is responding well to this particular call. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Right, thank you very much. Members, we're going to round two. The first one's from my side. Now, General, I think yesterday part of the underlying approach is from the from yourself and the team is ensuring the authority of the state is measured and also implemented. Now, one of the budget items in this program on page 59 is the issue of rail police, and an amount of 1.1 billion rand has been allocated in this financial year. Now, if we evaluate that environment currently, and yesterday I think there was a report that PRASA indicated there's a huge downturn in terms of members of the public who use public transport, specifically trains, and if you look at the crime profile, of course it's a CI matter, it's also a matter for visible policing. But, and I think there was a previous briefing this year on efforts to ensure that there's liaison with the institutions involved, but it's quite clear that the state authority in that environment is not present. I mean, I've got constitutions who were thrown out of the train and, you know, lost legs and so on, and I think if you, just in terms of the usage of public transport, and what is the plan in terms of it's a huge amount, 1.2 billion rand. But what is the plan to actually stamp the authority of the state in that environment, ensuring that it's a safe environment for commuters? The second issue is the second question. CISS yesterday raised the issue again of civil claims. Now, in the last 10 years, there was an increase of 778% in terms of civil claims against the police. Now, of course, there is also a migration of law practitioners from the medical field to the police environment, and there's a lot of issues. But most of those claims are in this program, visible policing. And it's again with regard to leadership at station level. And some units, but station level. And what is going to be done to actually manage this? Because we're talking about, what, 3.3 billion rand. With 3.3 billion rand, you can finance specialized interventions in program two. So what is going to be done to ensure that members, in terms of conduct, improve? In our interaction with IPET, some weeks ago, they say conduct of the police is out of the door. It's big problems. So we also need assurances from management intervention, but also from the cluster commanders that there is a close management of that. Otherwise, the civil claims is on a record high. And I mean, what's going to be done to deal with that? Let's go to the other members. Honorable Mula.
Thank you, Chetakwe. In slide 67, number of schools identified to implement the school safety program. Will you please indicate what different project types are implemented at identified schools that form part of the school safety project program? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Molabatsi, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Mine is just a rider to what the Chairperson has asked to say. To what do you attribute the increase in lawsuits? Is it because the communities are getting more aware of their rights, or is it because the police are getting more reckless? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Molabatsi. Honorable Mubele.
Thank you, Chair. Just a question on the border security aspects. I note that in the situational analysis section of the APP, there is mention that the security of ports of entry and the borders in general is going to hinge around the envisaged establishments of the Border Management Authority, which is being processed through the Home Affairs Portfolio Committee. Now, for a while, it seemed as though the concept and shape of that entity was in flux. And if I understand correctly, there's been a bit of a bun fight, a kind of territoriality dispute as to how the different stakeholders kind of plug into that. I think it's similar to the scuffle in past years that might have ended up in the withdrawal of the Defence Force largely from the border environments, leaving SAPS at the front line of being the security agency with that responsibility. So my question to the Commissioner is, how does he envisage the role of the SAPS in that Border Management Authority question or discussion? Because at least the last version of that bill that I saw entailed conferring the kind of powers on BMA officials that SAPS officers currently have. And that kind of confusion is a potential problem. Because at the same time, you also want to avoid a situation where we're going to have people operating in silos and things fall through cracks, which is the current vulnerability of the Border Control Cooperation Committee. Because SAR says, no, that's not my job, that's your job. Home Affairs says, no, that's not my job, that's your job. And SAP says, for example, scanners aren't our job, that's SAR's job. And then nobody does it. So how do we plug in? How do we make sure a seamless, coordinated, aligned work plan, and in particular, how SAPS sees themselves playing a role as part of the BMA discussion. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Bailey. Honourable Kalabana.
Thanks, Chair. I'm a bit concerned about something said by the National Police Commissioner about the public order policing units. They're dealing with annual increases in the numbers of protests. It's over 13,000 odd in this last year. They need 12,779 members. That's the ideal. They have under 50% of that, and yet he's being asked to decrease the numbers in the SAPS. Who are you being asked by? Is it by a treasury? Is it who's asking this? Because we have, where are you supposed to find those members? The stations are all, go to any station, anywhere. They'll say, well, we've still got people on the system and he died 5 years ago and actually she's been in hospital for a year and what, and they're off on duty at the courts. And so, yeah, actually, you know how it says we're doing sector policing, we've only got half a van and a quarter of a person. So stations are short. So who is it telling you you have to have fewer members? I'm guessing Treasury, and the minister yesterday says he needs $2 billion to promote worthy SAPS members who've been sitting on a zero career path for 15, 20 years, need a promotion, are ready to slit their wrists because they just can't get ahead, and again, Treasury. So I don't know whether we should be talking to Treasury as a committee and saying they have these issues. Cut the budget somewhere else, because this is crucial, critical security of the state stuff and security of our citizens stuff. And I have few sympathy. I meet SAPS members all the time and say, I haven't had a promotion in 25 years and I'll retire and I'll have to get a job after I retire so I can pay my bills. That's the refrain I hear. It's an absolute disgrace. So I'd like very much to hear, and then perhaps the chairperson can see if we can meet with whoever and say, look, don't sit on the SAPS members. They actually need more members. It can't be. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Kalibana, Honourable Markey. You covered, Honourable Mthlungu. You covered. Thank you, members. Is there any questions for Program 2? Right. Let's go then to the final responses. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Honourable Chair. I will relate to the strategic response on the railway police, but I think I must give General Masia the first bite in terms of the plan. Thank you.
Person. At the rail environment, we are having our day-to-day operations that are happening around the rail environment. The issue of the crime at rail environment, I am monitoring on a monthly basis the crime that is registered at the rail environment. And I must say, Honorable Chairperson, that so far, the crime at rail environment has decreased. We've got successes that we can share. Since we deployed the members from March last year until this year, we've got visible successes that we can show that the members are working daily at that. And however, when there is, Honorable Chair, we are training the rapid rail members on crowd management so that they can be able to deal with the crowds at the trains. And yes, I must say that we received an inquiry from Western Cape about the numbers of these members at the rail environment, and they were indicating to us that they need more. But we do have, and we answered that we do have trained members, although according to the community they won't be enough. But the members are dealing with that situation. Thank you.
General Sitoli, you want to add on that one?
Yes, I think, Chair, yeah, I would then again go back to your question that says then, despite what we're doing, the stamping of the authority of the state doesn't seem to be very visible. I think, firstly, I'm going to bring visible policing together with operation and response so that we shift the FELA 2 approach to cover that is railway. Because at the present moment, we do not necessarily have visible integrated approach between ourselves and the railway that is operative. But there's also a big question of operational standards, which we would also like to address. So from our side also, we do have a strategic plan, which is a turnaround plan for railway. I think we're going to beef that up so that there's also sufficient authority. We also have the railway stations. What we have said with the migration of resources is that we want to move the authority down to the ground. I think this is not going to exclude the railway stations. We would also like to take that particular authority down there so that we have the capacity to stem the authority of the state. And as we deal with it, then it must be felt. I think Praza also opted that we should meet. We will also have a meeting with all the other role players in that particular environment. I know that other crimes like your copper theft and the rest. So I will take it further with Plaza, but the stamping of the authority of the state will be shifted in terms of the current approach to cover that is the railway side.
Yeah, because the dilemma is, Commissioner, again, the issue of most of the crime in the country is taking place, for example, over weekends. Now, most of the crime on railway lines take place during peak hours. Yeah. Now, what is deployment then? Then it shifts in the police. What is the force deployment? So there's huge problems. So I think, once again, it's about visibility. Yeah. But the public must feel safe on public transport. So if we don't have that you know, change, rather have more people in at that stage available than in the mornings, for example. So it's about addressing the current situation, and that's my concern. We're not proactive enough. Honourable Kola Barnard and Honourable Mishlongo.
Chair, I absolutely agree. Listening to what was going on this morning, the situation here is that the public is no longer in any way, shape or form secure, doesn't feel secure on the trains, the ones that haven't been burned. Okay, many have been destroyed for hundreds of millions of rands. Where was your crime intelligence to prevent that? Zero. So that's all gone. And now people are so scared of going on the trains. They were literally using shoehorns to get them into taxis because of the bus strike. And it was costing people treble what they would normally pay. People are going to be battling at the end of the month. I mean, it's catastrophic for the citizenry, but they were too scared to go to see if there was a train because they know people burn them. They don't want to be burned alive. Where's the police? Where's the police situation? You weren't there when they were burned. You should have known. But where's our crime intelligence man? I hope he's listening.
He's listening.
Ha! There he is, the man with the dimples. Okay. That's the problem. And now they won't... It's going to take... You know, when a catastrophe happens, it takes a very long time to get that confidence back. So, yeah, I agree, Chair. It's a huge issue, and they need feet on the ground. Oh, yeah, they want you to have fewer of them. We're back to square one.
Honourable Mishlongo, also on that issue. Thank you.
No, Jefferson, in fact, I think I thought when we were talking about improvement on the front of technological usage in the service, this matter was going to be addressed, because you recall, Jefferson, sometimes back we were even proposing as a committee that, look, when you visit many of the developed countries, you have well-placed commanding centers that are actually monitoring, and that are monitoring even the movement and all that, because crime intelligence would have picked up who are the troublesome people and all those things. Because those people who even ban trains, they use stations where these trains pick up commuters. But as to what is the problem in terms of engaging Transnet in order to have a shared costing burden of this thing, and also then placing members there so that there is a clear monitoring of, just like exactly the same system that we actually observed, for example, on our visit to PE Chairperson. That kind of a setup will definitely make sure that stamping the authority of the state is well, is felt, and then people feel very much safe. But what's the point? I'm going to the to take a train just by me entering this. I am actually confronted by criminals who take out my possessions and all that. By the time you go and report, those criminals are long gone and all that. You can go to Devon Station there. Members are just seated there, just laughing, joking, and all that. Things underneath there are happening. But as to why we don't have these surveillance systems and all these things, I really don't understand that. We understand what is it that we want. Maybe, as the National Commissioner was trying to say, in the turnaround strategy, they will have to revisit the usage of the technological instruments to the best interest of the nation. I thought that it was then going to be a simple answer to say, yes, of course, here you definitely need, because if you go to Devon Station, for example, thousands of people descend there daily. And even here in Cape Town, these big stations, that's where things start to happen. But even only if we don't have a setup like what we saw when we were in PE, which proved it to be working, why are we not actually then piloting the same thing to these very same dense populated areas that actually comprise of the people who are actually then pushing the economy of this country forward? Because then workers of this country are no longer safe. We must be honest about that thing. Thank you.
All right, thank you, members. Let's get the final responses on this one.
Yeah, thanks very much, Honorable Chair. The bit of the fortunate thing is that the prominent divisions or performance agencies are here. As we move from here, VSPOL, ORS, Management Intervention, Crime Detection, CI, Technology, they will come together. And our intention is to have a dedicated combat plan to respond to this and make sure that the authority of the state is damped. We will also then have a special monitoring of this particular operation, which will be done by both General Masemola and also under General Skete Management Intervention. We will then, if there's areas obviously of concern by the committee, we will always be expected to come and give progress so that the difference is seen. With your permission, Chair, General Skete just wanted to add.
Thanks, National Commissioner. Chair, we are, are we busy with civil claims? I actually wanted to add on civil claims. We're not there yet. Okay. I'll wait until that subject, sir. But we will pursue this. Thank you.
There's a last input by General Mafia with your permission, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Honorable Mula asked a question about the identified schools. What programs are we employing at those schools? These schools are identified by the SAPS together with the Department of Basic Education through our MOU that we are currently having. The schools that are having problems, they are the schools that are identified in terms of bullying, in terms of violence at schools, as well as the abuse of drugs or alcohol and any other ill actions by the students at the schools. Then we go there, we have our crime awareness at those schools together with the Department of Education. We employ programs such as to teach children how to stay away from drugs. And during our encounter with these students, we are as well getting information from the school. And we as well teach these kids about the danger of using weapons at the schools, and as well as that they must be able to have cooperation amongst themselves. So these are the areas that we concentrate on. But nevertheless, these problems are identified by ourselves together with the Department of Education. So the 1,300 schools are ID'd by the two departments. I just want to give a feedback on the issue of Koster Chairperson. With your permission, yesterday, yes, there was a possible land invasion at Koster, but what transpired is that the acting station commander there, Captain Heymans, together with the municipality representative of Koster, Mr. Mekwe, and Councillor Naledi, they went to the ward where this there was a possible land invasion. They talked to the community there, and eventually the community dispersed. So there is nothing that was erected at that area. So that is the report. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, John Masia.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I will allow you the permission to investigate to start on the city plans.
Thank you, General. So indeed, we've discussed, presented before this committee on civil claims for a number of years. But from an MI point of view, I would just like, excuse me, I'm looking this side, because the thing is standing here. We have, as you very well know, we have a thematic intervention, a significant intervention driven by Lieutenant General Yefta in conjunction with legal services, section civil claims, provinces, VSPOL and so forth, where root cause analysis was done in terms of basically all your main groupings, such as illegal arrests, shooting incidents, and so forth, then I would just like to refer, there were two phases that were implemented. Now, the first phase, and it was not just circulars, it was in-depth, were things such as we've developed and implemented an operational guideline for operations in line with the OCC concept, and it's busy. We also guidelines for BRFs, SOP for first responders at station level, database, and then also other aspects which we have introduced, such as the J534 was revised, guidelines were also compiled, and there's a whole list of it. Be that as it may, sir, I don't have the final figures yet, and I would not like to be premature, but I think we can expect that a number of civil claims have been dealt with, probably more than in any previous financial year for the past 5 or 6 years, cancelled and reduced. Nevertheless, you might still see an increase in civil claims, notwithstanding that immense reduction, if my recollection is correct. We will have to, and I think we've got a full file on it, and you fully know we've been involved the past couple of years. I think we have this root cause analysis, and we will expect to get benefits in time to come. This is not a quick win, annual kind of project. So it is quite significant, but we trust that and we will start putting more emphasis also on there is emphasis, significant, but also more emphasis on your preventative side, such as I know they will engage also formally with your HIV environment to see whether you can't expand the knowledge base of when to arrest and so forth, although they do present those kind of modules in their curricula. So in terms of this, there is a significant project underway, sir, and we are also ready any time. We will probably also at some point approach our national commissioner with a phase two implementation as it happened, and as it was approved and happened, in order to also get his direction going forward. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, General Skutte. General Sitole.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. Just a two additions. One, in the school projects, one of the prominent projects that we're driving, which is currently in execution, is a junior leadership, which starts with the junior commissioner project. And it's going to be a massive project because it's going to apply the whole country. Then on the civil claims, maybe what we want to acknowledge and confirm, yes, the community is getting wiser and wiser every day. And there's also more legal graduates who are starting legal firms and they need work. And there's a little bit of an attempt to corrupt our members to engage in certain acts that will actually amount to civil claims. We're also looking at that particular aspect. But the hoping response, the moment we take experience to the ground, I think this will have a very little opportunity because we need people with experience and who will know what to do and who knows the rules of the game. So our other hope is in the migration, getting the right profile of people to become station commanders. So I think that's where we're going to address it at that particular level. And then, Honorable Chair, the security of the borders, the territorial fights, and the rest that is taking place there. I think, firstly, I made a promise that we're going to engage with SARS, but as we spoke there with General Mawela, we said we also want to engage with the BMA. But given the current uncertainties, as SARS, we stay with our constitutional mandate. The security of borders at the present moment to us is a security, it's a constitutional that is mandate. We work with everyone, but we're going to engage so that as government, we've got an obligation to work together. And for us to get this particular aspect correct, as we engage with both BMA, SARS and all the other work players, we're going to propose an integrated planning into this so that we're all able to provide a collective response to it. The progress in relation to this, I think we'll be able to give to the committee. The last one is, who actually asked us to decrease the numbers? Yeah, it actually reminds me of the movie Who Am I by Jackie Chan. I think I asked exactly the same question to management the moment I became, I took office as national commissioner. Who instructed us? And I asked the second question was, have we taken a national management forum decision that we are scaling down the service? Straightforward answer, no one instructed us. We were provided with guidelines from Treasury. And these particular guidelines, they were already implemented by other departments. What was required of us was to define and clarify our unique position. And anyway, when there is a collective compliance by all departments, we do not become the exception, but we stand and clarify our position. The decision we have then therefore taken is that we put forward the business case and we say to Treasury, we will not be able to scale down. Can we have a discussion? And Treasury has made an indication they are open to the engagement. If we do not get it right, I've already informed the minister. The minister is giving us support that we can escalate the matter to cabinet. I think those are the two routes that we are taking. But the one appeal, which is also a request that I also want to put forth to the committee, and I put it forth to both the minister and the president, I'm actually calling for the country to invest in policy. And I want to justify it. If you do not invest in policing, firstly, you've got an economic growth threat, which will impact in the whole country. But secondly, you've got a risk of social instability, which will impact anyway in your investors. If you have more hotspots and everything, investors withdraw. But if we invest in policing, we succeed in creating a safe and secure environment, there will be economic growth, there will be social stability, and there will be everything. And that's our approach towards Treasury. And that's the type of support we need. And we therefore promise we will provide a return out of this particular investment if it is done. But if we scale down policing, we are likely to head for disaster. The first thing that's going to get injured is the current economic strategy. And at the moment, we're putting all the efforts to protect it. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, National Commissioner. Members, we need to move to Program 4, Crime Intelligence, on page 104. So over to General Sithole.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. Again, crime intelligence is our challenge environment. At least the little that we have done as a new divisional commissioner. We have formalized the turnaround that is approached, but through the presentation, we'll indicate how we relate to it, and the presentation will be led by Major General Rari. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, General Rari.
Honourable Chair. Thank you. The next program is Program 4, Crime Intelligence. And on the slide now, you can just see where the Program 4 fits into the setup of SAPS. The purpose of crime intelligence is to manage crime intelligence and analyze crime information, provide technical support for investigators and crime prevention operations. There's two sub-programs. The one is the crime intelligence operations, and the second one is the sub-program intelligence and information management. As far as the budget is concerned, the expenditure estimates associated with Program 4, the crime intelligence operations is 1.4 billion for the 2017-18 financial year. That increases to 1.5 billion in the 2018-19 financial year. Intelligence information management is 2.1 billion in 2017-18, increasing to 2.2 billion in the 2018-19 financial year. The total is 3.5 billion in 2017-18, increasing to 3.8 million in the 2018-19 financial year. As far as this specific program 4 is concerned, and with reference to the expenditure estimates, that compensation payments are usually the largest portion within the program. Operational costs are primarily fuel, fleet maintenance, travel and subsistence as generated by the personnel employed in this environment. And it is also important for the committee to note that the Secret Service account is not part of O23 Police. Okay, moving to the content of the APP and the indicators associated with the different sub-programs. The strategic objective of the program is to gather crime intelligence in support of the prevention, combating and investigation of crime. The first sub-program, Crime Intelligence Operations, the objective statement is to conduct network operations to infiltrate, penetrate criminal groupings and syndicates, and to collect intelligence on priority threats. And the performance indicator is the percentage of network operations successfully terminated. And the target is set at 100% that all the network operations that will be initiated within the environment need to be successfully terminated within the upcoming financial year. Secondly, conducting security assessments within the SAPs relating to the following: vetting investigations finalized for prioritized environments, the ICT security assessment and physical security assessment, focusing on the first one, the number of security clearances issued. The target that we've set, Honorable Chair, is 1,154 security clearances to be dealt with in the current financial year. The percentage of ICT security assessments finalized, that is determined in terms of the annual assurance schedule, and the target is set at 100% of the assessments that have been scheduled to be finalized. The percentage of physical security assessments finalized is also as per the annual assurance schedule, and the target is set at 100% of the assessments that has been scheduled to be finalized. And the percentage of security awareness programs conducted in accordance with the Information Security Regulator Framework of SAPS, the target is set at 100% with a figure of 165 programs that has been identified to be implemented. The objective statement, generate intelligence products in support of proactive SAPS operations relating to the threat and risk assessment and early warning reports. The number of threat and risk assessment reports generated for proactive policing operations is set at 14,480. The number of early warning reports generated for proactive policing operations set at 21,720. And then again, the target set for the percentage of proactive intelligence reports that were operationalized by the relevant business units is set at 100%. With the generating intelligence products in support of reactive SAPS operations relating to the profiles and intelligence analysis reports, the number of profiles generated for reactive policing operations is set at 98,277. The number of intelligence analysis reports generated for reactive policing operations is set at 141,423. And then the percentage of reactive intelligence reports that were operationalized by the relevant business units is set at 100%. moving to the sub-program Intelligence Information Management, the objective statement promoting mutual assistance and cooperation between the SAPS and other national and international enforcement, law enforcement agencies to reduce transnational crime, with emphasis on the facilitating of cross-border operations, facilitating the arrest of identified transnational crime suspects, generating the global threat assessment reports and generating persons of interest report, the cross-border operation facilitating the relation to requests received is to attend to 100% of all the requests. This specific issues relate directly to the Interpol capability. Percentage of arrest of identified transnational crime suspects facilitated in relation to requests received, the target is also set at 100%. On the same objective statement, the number of global threat assessment reports generated for SAPS operations set at one for each quarter, or these basically quarterly reports, and the number of persons of interest reports generated on a quarterly basis, the target has also been set at 4 for the current financial year. The updates that we've done to Program 4 Crime Intelligence in terms of the strategic plan, Honourable Chair, relates to the following. The strategic objective that has been removed to supply intelligence products relating to the National Strategic Intelligence to the National Intelligence Coordinating Committee, or NICOC, and to institute counterintelligence measures within the SAPS. Then the old objective statement, conduct network operations to address prioritized crime, has now been rephrased to read, conduct network operations to infiltrate, penetrate criminal groupings and syndicates, and collect intelligence on priority threats. Then also the objective statement, provide intelligence reports in support of proactive SAPS operations relating to the following threat risk assessments and early warning reports, has been rephrased as follows. Generate intelligence reports, so basically in terms of both the old objective statements, the word provide has just been replaced with the word generate to make it more applicable to the environment and in line with the type of or the nature of the activities that are being performed within those environments. I will say, yeah, that concludes the indicators associated with Program 4 Crime Intelligence. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Members, tea has arrived, but you must please help yourself. We're not going to stop at this stage. We've got momentum. I will give the first input and we'll give the other members opportunity. First, maybe to welcome General Jacobs. He's the first CI head in 6 years, permanent head. But it's quite important that he's got a huge task ahead of him, and we wish him well in his new very important task from the committee side. But a few questions from my side. In terms of the vision to do the turnaround, because you said that the organization and the minister was really yesterday very damning in his assessment of the current status of CI. And the input that we got yesterday from civil society said, in terms of the police, the challenges for the police, it's not really a budgetary or resources issue, because the police percentage-wise can't get more from the fiscus. It's a leadership issue. So you must get the leadership core in the CI environment that's corrupt-free and that it's got confidence. But how, what are you going to do with the environment that's been plagued with infighting, very bad appointments of friends, family, and so on and so on? That's the reality. So what are you going to do to turn that situation around? Then the second issue is that crime is today a cross-national matter. It's not a matter limited to the 9 provinces. Most of your high crime activities stems from other destinations. Now, 2 years ago, the then acting national commissioner closed a lot of the foreign posts and so on. So I just want to know, do you also foresee that capability will be enhanced to ensure that SAPS have the necessary information available? And then thirdly, in other jurisdictions, the Minister of Police or the Minister of Home Affairs or whoever is responsible for the police gets a proactive crime intelligence analysis every morning, 8 o'clock, what will give him the picture. Now, we had Vuyani, we had Fish Must Fall 1, and other surprises. So I just want to know, can we get assurance from the new incumbent in the hot seat that from a proactive point of view, the executive will get the products every morning and the police commissioner indicating what is the threats and that the police then can deal with it effectively. Honourable Mulabatsi.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. Yeah, I also welcome General Jacob to your daunting task. And we hope you are up to the challenge. And for now, I don't have questions except the one that I posed this morning about the whereabouts of Brigadier Pele. Thank you very much.
Honorable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation, General Jacobs. I want to ask you this question. Since you were appointed to crime intelligence, what did you do to bring stability in that department? Because you know there were lots of problems, and now you are permanently employed. My second question, will you please indicate how reliable are the systems of performance measurement for vetting, manually or e-vetting system? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Mula. Honourable Bailey.
Thank you, Chair. And I'll join the colleagues in welcoming General Jacobs to his role. He and I have had interaction in previous lives, so hopefully he is well positioned to effect a turnaround. I mean, just by way of background, it's quite clear that crime intelligence has been a dysfunctional division, certainly at least over the last 6 years. The stats we got, or we saw from the ISS on yesterday, showed that organized crime has been going up since 2012, and that's one of the key reflections of crime intelligence being steeped in deeper and deeper crisis. And in the last part of last year, I think we started getting some clarity and some details as to why that picture was forming over those 6 years. We heard, for example, the fact that we do not have an adequate informant footprint in order to get the raw information from the ground to help forecast oncoming problems. We also heard that there was a huge capacity shortage in intelligence analysts at cluster and higher levels, and then there was also the admission, I recall from the commissioner actually towards the end of last year, that the crime information officer capacity at station level was also not where it had to be. Chairperson's already indicated what some of the problems around cronyism and not fit for purpose appointments were that contributed to that, because the thing I've never understood is that, I mean, the overwhelming majority of the CI budgets is for compensation of employees, so we're paying labor. I remember last year's annual reports was 99% spent, so there's no underspending, but the critical key areas where you need the skilled human capacity at station level CIOs, at cluster level intelligence analysts, the informants who should be getting, you know, transfer payments as obviously as part of the operation of giving information is not there either. So my question is, apart from the cronyism, has there been a kind of chronic mismanagement of personnel in this division, and what are the top three priorities short term to fix that, so that come this time next year, and we have the same budget hearing, we can hear that this has changed, that has improved, and that's been eliminated. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Bailey. Honourable Kalabana.
Thanks, Chair. General Jacobs, the National Police Commissioner has assured me you're a wonderful man, but you have inherited a deeply, deeply dysfunctional entity. The damage Richard and Bludy did was incalculable, and Ria Piecha, who's today a trustee in the SAPS medical aid scheme, Polmed, and the chief executive of the Safer South Africa Foundation, in March 2014, deliberately downgraded the qualifications needed for the provincial crime intelligence heads down to a matric from tertiary education, X years experience. She had mates she wanted to put in, so whoop, down it went. So she lowered the bar for these senior critical police positions. Really, a matric certificate for a million rand position, absolutely ludicrous. So you've got a lot of damage control to do. I don't know what you do when you have people in positions who are not necessarily capable of doing the job. I don't know what your labour legislation says, but good luck with that. I foresee a lot of work for you in the future, ma'am. So realigning and reassigning is obviously, I imagine, going to be your main focus for the next couple of months. Now, one of the most obvious, and there are many, failings in crime intelligence has been the rural attacks. 7 yesterday and the day before, people murdered. This is not just a crime of passion or a robbery. This is systemic torture. Tying a four-year-old to a table and gang raping her, or raping the wife while you hang a man by his ankles and stab him to death, making him watch. This is like the norm in our rural areas now, and SAPS members just don't have the capacity to get to these massively far farms, etc. But these attacks are planned weeks in advance, and this should be giving your intelligence weeks to prevent them from happening. But of course we've had no crime intelligence. So I would truly ask that you make that one of your priorities, is trying to save people who live in rural areas. I'm not talking farmers alone and white farmers. I mean, the one hung by his ankles is a black man and his wife was a black woman. And their farm managers are being slaughtered and the workers are being, it's mayhem out there. It's awful. So I see that as a huge job for you. Again, we have reference to this deeply mysterious Indian company, iView Integrated Systems. Not about bulletproof vests this time. This time it's about Daedalus mobile encryption service, 200 licenses that expired at the end of last month and will now cost you 5.7 million rand to renew. Most interested in that contract, so I'd like to hear about that. And then the biggest failure, really, over nearly the past decade, has been the danger that crime intelligence put our SAPS members into with their absolute inability to do the job they're paid millions to do. We've had officers drive, happily driving along, around a corner into a massive protest, and people died because they attacked the car, they shoot in panic. They kill people and they finally get away, and next thing a community's got 5 dead people and the SAPs are murdering bastards and they were fighting for their lives. I mean, that is the sort of thing crime intelligence is supposed to protect our SAPs members from doing, and it hasn't been happening. Thankfully we've got, for example, the tourists being robbed time after time after time when they left O.R. Tambo. That was hitting international headlines, and a cop was behind it. So that eventually was solved. But the cash and transit heist, don't tell me we haven't got people involved tipping people off. The minister said yesterday they never, oddly enough, have a heist on a transit van with that's empty, returning to a bank. They always know. So they have their intelligence, and we need you to have your intelligence to out-intelligence them. Really, it can't go on. Cars just sit back now and they film it. They watch the fireworks. Boof, they watch it blow up. They watch the guys come down. They watch the guys go off. It's like something out of a bad movie. And we are clueless. Now, to my mind, as a layperson, the very purpose of your networking operations is to provide basically proactive. Yes, some reactive, but proactivity is key. And you have to neutralize those crime threats. But I see you starting from scratch. I'm very concerned. And I've raised it before that 7 of the Mdluli family members, from wife to ex-wife to children to what, were all shunted into crime intelligence. The National Police Commissioner said some of the children were kicked out for disobedience or something or other. I don't know what that means in police terms. But I obviously fear that you've got someone or some people in there feeding Richard Mdluli, as they have done for how many years was he suspended, forever, feeding him information and been running this thing by remote control. That is going to be a problem for you. So it's just a word of warning that I don't think that's going to stop easily. And I think you need to be on top of that. The final thing would be, and the National Police Commission said, all new stations will have built-in security and controls and be very secure. But that leaves us with how many stations? 1,000, near that number, with nothing. Zero, zip. So it's up to crime intelligence to tell us when a gang is going to stroll in, hold a gun to the man's head and say, hand over all your firearms. Because it is happening, and it will continue to happen until your team are on the top of their game, which they haven't been for pretty much as long as I've been in Parliament. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Colonel Barnett. Honourable Markey.
Thank you, Jefferson. Mine is just to congratulate General Jacobs. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Markey. Honourable Slungu.
No, thanks. I think congratulations are in order, General Jacobs. But you see, my only fear, General, is that quite often, I don't know what informs this. We all know that we have just been appointed into this. Now, you know, with all this, I think these are just routine things that crime intelligence ought to be doing. In South Africa of late, General, crime intelligence, how I defined it, Chairperson, was not only the first line of intelligence like crime intelligence, just every intelligence organ in South Africa is just a quick scheme to get rich. Because you are protected by a high level of secrecy, and you plant the money nicely, hiding behind terms of secrecy, and appoint boyfriends and girlfriends, covered under high secrecy. This, to me, is a structural problem and accountability problem. To say, that's why you have got a former head of SSA who's now going to cause mayhem in our correctional services after looting billions of our rents. And, you know, it tells you that, you have a serious problem. Because people use this forest secrecy to hide their corruption and finally become billionaires out of the blue easily. If and only if, General, you were to tabulate the system to say, these are the weaknesses that exist, the Inspector General of Intelligence, this is a role to be played, so that as a committee we can then be able to say, here, what is the role of the net joint fitting to this committee? Because some of us are not privy to the information that is dealt up there. But here we have got generals who are commanding various divisions, taking young men and women to a point of slaughter because they operate without eyes and ears. People who are appointed to be crime intelligence officers just for routine purposes will just generate this nice thing to you, to say that, you know, there is this, which is just a false report, that Philip Mchongo is threatening subversion of the state, blah, 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 because it's anti-this and that. Fake reporting. And you have got no time that you can read millions or thousands of these people who themselves are also plundering slush funds that you generate to stations, depositing it to their accounts of their girlfriends and all. Leaving frontline forces totally naked, without ears and eyes. This is what I think your role, General, will have to be, to say, how can we have confidence that as a new officer, you know, with this to me, it can be just a cut and paste thing, even what was that man was Mkumpan who served for 2 weeks and was found to have done all mess and was taken off. But the accountability, the systems, management of the systems, and lines, and you as the overall commander to say, the bug will have to stop here. So that should, people, 20 people be killed here. We can be able to say, down the line, instead of us simply saying, where was crime intelligence? We must know that at this level, you know, I was very much pleased, Jefferson, when you visited PE, that head of CI there, who was actually then analyzing the situation contextually, in full, seeing that this officer knows what he is up to. Now, but this thing, General, I can tell you, you will fall also on your sword, even only if you can just rely to say you are going to generate these things which are cut and paste to say, just providing support to this and that and that and that, without dealing with the systemic controls, the tools of controls, so that we can have good men and women in right positions, knowing that our communities are actually in safe hands. Without people that can actually then run some kind of dirty work and abusing state resources, which finally will lead to what Dr. That guy talked of, plundering of state resources to a limitless speed that will never get full. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. General Sithole, General Jacobs.
Yes, thanks, honorable chair. Actually, the questions are all directed to General Jacobs because the committee wants to listen to him. I'll just give three expressions just in laying the foundation for him. One, philosophically, our greatest glory is not in never falling, but in rising each time we fall. So he is here to pick up crime intelligence. The second one, obviously when crime intelligence sneezed, the whole of the nation pain was inflicted. One of the seven logics, time heals almost everything. Give the time some time. And therefore he needs time. The last one, Nicholas Minolta, trapped by reality and freed by imagination. Our imaginations are going to free us from this situation. Thank you very much. Can, with your permission, give him the opportunity to respond. Thank you.
Thank you, General Sithole. General Jacobs, you're welcome.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, General Sithole, honorable members. It's indeed a privilege and much appreciate all the words of congratulations. And I hear the concern and the grave responsibility. But isn't it we are burdened with that responsibility. We are. So as officers, we must act and rise accordingly. But I thought maybe just as a bit of a context within which I think we operate as an organization. I mean, we're in the police. We're not a separate organization. So in the first phase of this period, we got 5 standing orders that governed handover. Now, Chairperson, you asked the question, how do we instill confidence and instill that procedure of the police? Oh, my apologies. That procedure of the police always, in my experience, always asserts control, command and control, the handover, standing order, and this. There's essentially 5 key standing orders that looks at resource handover. Standing order 21, 42, 48, 50, and 51. That looks before you take command, before you there's a handover of command, you must understand what resources are there. Then there's a number of national instructions that guide operational command. So between that, we've already have been in my last few, the last 10 days that I've been in the post, have met with all the commanders, the provincial heads, all of those things. I thought that was an important element, and we've conveyed that. We have a report due in June the 5th for my boss, to ensure that by June the 5th we would have 60 days of understanding what do we have, what is the resources, where are they, what has happened to them. And I think it deals with Honorable Barnard's question about with the equipment that we purchased, where are they. That process will enable us to get a proper sense. If I may say, I don't know if it's because of it or as a result of it, but we have one resignation already in place, I think the following day. So I think that's the first point. So we should be part of the police, so it's not a new process. Those before me and those after me will command in the same procedural process. The fact that we're here as a team suggests also that we will handle the crime intelligence as a team. I think that's the important process also. So part of, I thought that's maybe an important, and this key, I think in the documents that we've presented, they were key, I think, in the BRRR issues that we've responded to, there were 3 key strategies. This was the corporate renewal strategy, the county intelligence strategy, and the betting strategy. We thought that is important, and that's on the one end, it's the handover procedure and ensuring that those key areas be populated. But maybe that's an important point to measure before we go to all of it. How do we change, as the Honourable Member has indicated, how do we measure? I think one of the newspapers wrote about how do we measure impact. The intelligence environment, there's essentially 2 key business models that drive us, threat management and risk mitigation. Now, threat management, you identify the key threats that the country faces, and you have to populate those threats and understand them and then begin to work to combat those threats. Now, within each threat, they constituent parts. If robbery would be a threat, it consists of, you have to populate how many robbery groups do you have, and within each robbery groups you'll get groups at street level, groups at cross-cluster level, groups at, then they do different categories of crimes, cash in transit, railway robbery groups, and all of that. So then you populate that. We've already sat with for 2 days, the first 2 days, is to understand what is our analysis capacity. Now, you can't do threat management if you don't, at the core of it is analysis. If you understand the threats, you have to analyze them, and then from that basis, you must direct issues. So that's the one part. The second part is risk mitigation. And that would be the question I think Honorable Barnard asked about the police station that is being attacked. Part of our role is to look at risk assessment, security assessment, and do with my natural ally. I've got 3 natural allies, visible policing, detectives, and the Hawks. That together we move, we cross that river together. So I think in terms of dealing with
with stations and the threat at station level is that risk mitigation. Understanding, for example, the issue we used when we caught the firearm syndicate, there is hordes of information around. Ballistics produces information every day on patterns, and that's how we caught Prince Roo. By looking at the ballistic information, its footprint, understanding what firearms were used, and following the footprint, and knowing these firearms cannot be in the Western Cape's hands. It has to be somewhere else, and then following the footprint, and then begin to track the data. So part of risk mitigation is also understand the information available. So part of that, at risk mitigation, we've already met with the IGI. I think our first stakeholder we met, external stakeholder, was the Inspector General of Intelligence. We're meeting them tomorrow. That's why I had to ask for the change. We're meeting them, and they're handing over the certificate for us to work on. We've already formed the investigation team to look at those things. There were a number of issues raised. We are already there because he's the person, I think, honourable member, that you asked for, in that forest, the one that can enter with us into the forest, and that we must provide cat. He's the one that provides the cat eyes to get us deep into the forest behind the holes we necessarily need to have to conduct our business well. So we've met yesterday with the AG on the low standard on compliance, the compliance matters he raised. We met with them yesterday with a committee in order to mitigate, to understand those particular requirements, because obviously we have concerns. What is our advantage? We have an internal audit, a national one led by a general at NCI. We have a brigadier with a team. So that should ensure. I met with them for 3 hours the other day to understand why is it that we're picking up issues. What is it that we need to do to ensure that you are there and you're the one that must guide us? So we've done on those things. So the two key threats, the key measurement instruments is threat management and risk mitigation. That will drive all the other threats that we deal with. Hopefully I've covered the issue. So there was a few questions about crime. So I think that issue on the crime and the national, the cross-national and transnational dynamics. There's a structure that I think is approved. They're generally populated. There's been challenges with some, but I think in the last 2 weeks that has been resolved by the National Commissioner about the appointment of people in the key countries. So that will enable us to work as well. But there's existing cross-border forums that sits at the national office that's already existing. We thought that's an important area. I think we do have key. I think there are some challenges. Maybe I should just look at the dynamics there. There's our assessment is similar to what the BRRR raises. Discipline management. We've identified it. We've understood it. I think maybe honourable member, you asked about that brigadier. She's on suspension now. On suspension, we've completed the investigation, but there's a court case now where it's challenging that particular matter, the suspension. So I can't talk too much about that one now, but that process is underway. So that deals with, I think, with that matter. The BRRR also mentioned the issue of the intelligence footprint. I think the important issue, and I think the honourable member opposite Slongo mentioned an important point: how do we develop the footprint? And the footprint doesn't necessarily have to be police bodies. We have a combination of we have existing information sources like forensics. We have the police stations that compile daily reports. We have the cluster operation rooms. We have the provincial command centres or the PCOCCs where information is located. It is our role to be able to see how we can mine and extract the relevant information from there. So that's the one element. We have got hordes of information. If we interview, I've happened to have been in the cluster now for 2 years, and I found it the most interesting experience to go back to the station, to the clusters again, because we worked on information generated at the police station. And because of my experience in intelligence, I was able to link with provincial intelligence and the cluster intelligence a lot more optimally. The other footprint that already exists, we have what we call known as CIMAC, the Crime Information Management Analysis Center at the local station, that falls structurally under the Crime Bureau, but they have a dual function. They have a function of crime pattern analysis, and doing profiles of every person that's arrested and every person that's possibly a suspect. They take photos of every suspect every day. We, in the cluster that I worked with, set up WhatsApp groups for daily tracking. So our footprint is there. We must just optimally utilize and mine what is there. I've already met with General Sekukune about those issues in terms of how we can begin to, in a natural partnership, look at how do we extract the hawk there. In fact, each of the departments has information management, our components has information management centers. Our job must be, amongst others, to extract that. Then all government departments have information management centers. So how do we engage? We met one of my second meeting with external stakeholder after the escape. Honorable Barnard was that we immediately after that, they happened to have had a crisis meeting with all their provincial heads, provincial commissioners here. We then went to, I went with two analysts to meet with them and to begin to explore how can we because by then we discovered there was a unique pattern emerging across four provinces, and we were able to begin to understand it and develop, because they've got the prisoners, they know where the prisoners move every day. We don't necessarily know that, so how do we develop that? And how do we organize their data for us to enable us to extract better? So we are in the early stages of that talk. So the footprint is not necessary that police home bodies must be there. It's how to use the existing home bodies and the information and extract. So that's in the process where we are. Having said that, it's early days. General Sitole had asked for time. So I think we will look at those issues. Then on the stability of leadership, I think we've there's been now an appointment. I think so that will be hope that will cause stability. There's been people that were on suspension, and the time has expired. We have returned them to the office, and we found that those issues we could handle and deal with. I've instituted. Now, obviously, I must admit, in 7 years, there were six acting managers. So it does cause instability, and directions are not clear. So part of the process now is to stabilize that. We're not in the process of chasing people down the passage and pushing people out. We're about keeping secretaries in their place, keeping people in their place, and then individually, for lack of a better term, in soccer, we call about man management. In the managing the individual managers to understand how we deal with it and then begin to work our way forward. I think Honorable Barnard mentioned an interesting issue about how do we deal with a chronic personnel dysfunction. So I believe if we start the humanity again in the way we engage people, we will get to a place where we can. And I always found decent behavior brings out the indecent in those who are not decent. And then we can start with the disciplinary process. We don't have to be rude to be able to work with people. And I've never found the need to scream and shout. So I don't think that is our principle. So we will be able to deal with that. The fourth thing I think that the BRRR raised was the vetting. I think General Sitole did raise it, mentioned it before. There is a vetting strategy. And the vetting strategy is essentially built on kind of four key pillars, three key pillars, as looking at the security classification. We've over-classified a lot of times. So how do we spread the classification? There's four subcategories. There's actually one that has become, that for some reason people forgot about it, but it's in the MIS requirement, the Minimum Information Security Standard requirement, restricted. We start from confidential, but it's actually restricted, it's still there. Confidential, secret, top secret. So once you've done that, take people, if he enters the first gate, restricted, then the person has a vetting coverage. but it would be a screening process. So you go through to look at that, then begin to categorize who must, which categories of personnel must fall in which area. Then to ensure that, I think in the strategy was also part of the security clearance is to reorganize the flow process of the top secret. Because what we used to do, we haven't changed it, we're finalizing that. You do the polygraph at the end. So if it's difficult for my colleague here to get, for me to get all of her references, and it takes 2 years, the polygraph happens only after 2 years. We can put the polygraph in the front, and then the polygraph can pick up stuff to make us to quicker decline or quicker say, but there's nothing, there's no issues to be worried about. And then we can at least provide this at the secret level clearance. So it's about just tweaking and rearranging the operational model within each category. So that's part of the vetting strategy. Then putting in place a permanent vetting panel, because the vetting panel has always been people taken from other jobs. That does mean we're going to lose other responses, but if we do that, we can actually do more than our target. Because there's currently already 5,000 applications in process at various stages. So we could be increasing our limit more if we sort out that. And then, for example, a confidential vetting timeline is 10 years. So, and it's only secret and top secret, that's 5 years. So you could be getting a lot of people if we look at who needs secret and who needs the process of eliminating and then determining where we need most of it. So in our calculation, we're still working on the model, but about 10% people need top secret, 25% need secret, and the rest would be confidential and restricted. And I think so we've maybe designed ourselves into a bit of a problem by putting too many people into the top secret, because by its very design, it takes long. So those are the issues. So we're in the early stages of re-looking at what to assert the strategy outlined by the National Commission in the earlier sense. And I'm just going through the list of questions. How do we, there's been a chronic personnel issues, which are the top three process, I think, the Honourable Member has raised. I think the fact that, for me, the priority effect has been that people have been moved around. When a new manager came, new people were moved around. The first thing is to keep people where they are and begin to understand if they fit for purpose and they fit the environment, and individually, one-on-one, as opposed to a mass exit and a mass bringing in of new people. But the fortunate part is I don't know so many people. I know a lot of them, but I don't know them well enough to be able to move them around or to say they must stay or not go. So we need time to assess and do a proper assessment. And my natural ally inside the organization is counterintelligence. We work together closely. So if they and the head of analysis, we have an acting head, we're busy kind of resolving that one. If the two of them is the natural allies that has to work with the head of crime intelligence. And then that is already, we've got that fairly bad. He's, for example, acting whilst I'm out of the office. So that person will ensure that picks up the early warning indicators of personnel, lifestyle issues that come up. So that's how we intend to deal with those. Crime intelligence doesn't have to be inherently dysfunctional. It's maybe as a result of what has happened the last 6 years. But there's enough oversight systems. We've got this committee, we've got the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, we've got the IGI, we've got the Auditor General, we've got a very robust media, we've got people who tell stories. So we are, there might be a forest, but the sun does get in. It's not a completely dark environment. Some areas, the methodology of operation is covert. Doesn't meet the control mechanisms have to be covert. And therefore we've got the IGI, we've got those people. And we've met with them, we sit with them, and it is, I have no choice, I'll be fired if I don't meet with the IGI. if I don't adhere to their compliance. So it's written in, so the architecture for command and for monitoring is there. We, that's our commitment, that we will adhere to the rule of law and the oversight systems we must account for. So I will have to say that. I think General Mugwenya will deal with the HR, direct HR issues of the SMSs. Hopefully I spoke a lot, so my apologies. Thank you.
Thank you, General Jacobs. Follow-up, Honourable Kalabonat.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. For a man who doesn't speak a lot as the National Police Commissioner, didn't do badly. I just wanted to know, you have a Major General Zimu. What position is he in crime intelligence? Is she suing you, or are you suing her? Is it a crime matter? I'm just very interested because I actually know a great deal more about this matter now, and it's not as cut and dried, I think, as we were originally led to believe. Thank you.
Other follow-ups? Honourable Markey?
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a comment. I think I can be enlisted into crime intelligence. I had a very good lesson on what happens.
Other members? Yeah, I think that the one issue maybe just to follow up is the issue of your product, you know, in, also the early warnings. I mean, you're going to need time,
yeah.
But, you know, the big concern for this committee is also always the risk to the public and events that may be out there but is not detected by the crime enforcement agency. So maybe just if we can get assurances on that. Yes. Other questions, members? Is that the lot? Thank you.
Thank you. Hon President Perkle, she's not suing us, but she's suing. She's gone to court to get the suspension overturned. That's the process where we are now. On General Zuma, General Zimo is there of counterintelligence. Then on the early warning system, the early warning system is actually an integrated policing system where crime intelligence issues the early warning. But in the early warning environment, there's structural systems that goes with it. So if I issue an early warning, I can't just send it into the ether. It must actually go to a name, to a person that must receive it. There must be an operational plan that must be compiled. But if my colleague here gets the early warning, she's obligated by regulation to compile an operational plan. We have a duty to ensure that the information was followed up. So that's part of it. So I think we have a duty of care to follow up to ensure that what we've sent is actually followed up on. And I think that's the issue. That's why for the last 10 years we've created the command centers and they call it now the PCOCs, the operational coordinating centers. For that's the one place where early warnings, because we are in the intelligence, we are a bit jealous about our words. Early warnings is ours. It is probably one of the issues issued by two generally a member. Any station member sometimes issues an early warning. Early warning is to be, for example, so early warnings are evaluated information tested by an analysis process to confirm that it's intelligence. Then it's structured into a report, sent to a party to receive it, who must confirm they've received it. And then we've got it every province. Intelligence nodal points from where the early warning is sent. So we have track records, of course, by rights. If we have sent an early warning and that incident happens, the police, either I'm responsible, as crime intelligence, or my colleague here is responsible. But therefore the early warning usage is very particular. It has to come intelligence assessed and then sent out, determined, managed, and ensure that. So part of what we're going to be doing in the process is to do quality assurance and to ensure firstly that the systems are in place and then quality assure that if there was, we can't know about everything. There are spontaneous things that emerge. It is once it happens is whether we're able to pick it up through the command centers at the province, at the clusters. Then if it comes to us, our ability to send out field teams to be able to assess and to see what is this. Was it a sporadic thing that because of an of a of an anger that happened somewhere, that it spilled over, and our ability to contain a first response. And then the relationship between Vispol and ourselves to see how together we mitigate. Because we cannot claim to know all incidents that happened. Like there was an incident 3 years ago where a child got knocked down at a place where for a while they've been asking for speed bumps. Mm. And then this child, 4-year-old child, got knocked down. It was a gruesome accident. And that triggered a response that became a week later we didn't know what it was started until we tracked it. So how do we deal with incidents happens at the first responder and how to understand how the first responder responds and then from intelligence work with it, was four marriages together. So we spoke this morning, my colleague general next to me, about if you send the wrong operational unit to a place, if you send TRP to people starting protesting, because they're skilled in a particular way. They're skilled in a particular way, so part of the intelligence role is also to ensure we send the right people. We communicate with the right commanders to ensure that the right people come up. So that's the it's a careful balancing act. That's my long-winded answer.
Thank you, Joel Jacobs. Honorable Kalabana, another follow-up?
Well, I think one of the biggest lacks of crime intelligence we've seen in the last perhaps 2 years has been the attacks on the shopping malls. I mean, they were almost a daily occurrence at one stage. But I'm hoping, and I know you've only just started to warm your chair, but I'm hoping we're going to see situations where you're sufficiently proactive in terms of crime intelligence to stop, for example, the armed raid and robbery at the Westville Mall about an hour ago. We're so used to having no crime intelligence. Nobody even thinks these days that something like that could have been prevented. But actually, now you're here, it can and it should, and I'm hoping that within a month or so that will start happening, because we've not seen that. When those mall robberies were of common occurrence, crime intelligence was nowhere to be found. Zero zilch. I don't think they ever even arrested anyone.
If I may, on the 18th and 19th of June, we're appearing in a case where we caught mall robbers. That's blowing up ATM, and we appear in there. So, but a lot of the mall robberies, it's about a design problem. And it's developed in stages over years. Now, a lot of the mall robberies is about cell phones and jewelry. They sit at the entrance and next to the parking lot of a mall. We here in the Western Cape, we've engaged the malls where certain places become vacant if the cell phone shops can move around. So a lot of it is about that, but the situation is dependent. They won't rob in the middle of the mall. In other places where there were a lot of CITs around the malls, we help them to redesign where they locate, what they call the mall, the banking mall, at the entrance into the bank mall. So if they rob a cash intruder, they rob him at the back, not in the public of the mall. So he moves through a back entrance of the mall. So let me just explain more. Banga and the mall in the main road, Promenade Mall. There have been a number of robberies, but it's been at the back of the mall, not inside the mall. So it's about design location as well. So part of the issue, is, honorable member, is to in our analysis, we've already instructed them to assess the mall robberies and where they've happened. And, I mean, it's got to do with taxi violence as well. If you don't plan, the Road Transport Act says very clearly, for any building or a business to develop, you need a road transport management plan. So if they don't, then you get taxis coming there uncoordinated, then you get taxi shootings at a mall. The mall of Africa on the day it was opened had a taxi murder because it wasn't built into the planning. So it's about the role of intelligence with other departments to begin to identify the risk factors. That's why we said our role is threat management and risk mitigation. Begin to understand that. In the airports, we do the same thing. We look at the airport design and we get involved. We become a nuisance to ensure that there's line of sight. And so those issues, the mall robberies, it won't happen overnight and stuff, but together with the colleagues here, and we get into business against crime and fight with them to ensure that we're with the city, because part of the city's problem is always They approve, but they never bring us in. Yet, it's part of the environmental design says there must be a security plan. We never involved in, we have never been brought. Part of our role is to begin to fight to get our voices heard. So I think that's the issue that we think. Thank you.
Thank you, General Jacobs. General Nguema.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. In terms of capacity within the CI, from the fixed establishment of 7957, the actual is currently 7613. We have identified the gaps. We advertised 102 posts for lateral filling, but also there has been an engagement with General Jacobs, who has indicated the approach that he would like to take when it comes to recruitment. It's going to be a different approach, and we will be supporting him. He is going to be involved with the filling of the vacancy, and he has committed that it is within his priorities. We will also be there to support. I do have a breakdown of the figures. I don't know whether it will be necessary from national to including all provinces. I don't know whether I should go through the figures.
Am I correct that lateral filling is you are now taking people from other divisions, and again, then SATS out there is losing 102 members, which he doesn't want to do, because he needs them for the crops and, other areas. So it's not an easy one, but feeding from Peter to feed Paul is not necessarily a great idea.
Thank you, Honourable Member. General Sitole, do you want to...
Thank you, Chair. Maybe just starting with this last concern. Before we move people laterally, and also before we bring in a new structure, the personnel plan must make provision for that. I think the rationale behind moving certain people from other divisions to crime intelligence, the only thing that will inform it are the skills profiles. There are those who are highly experienced. Some of them include vetting practitioners who were trained. They were displaced. That is before. But before then, General Nguyenya says we can move them lateral back to crime intelligence, the personnel plan must then respond to me to say how are those gaps going to be closed. The same applies, no new structure. I must first get a motivation, what is the structure for? And what is the requirement for that particular structure? Where are we going to get the bodies to fill that particular structure, so that we don't go advertise posts, people apply from stations and everywhere into the new structure, and then there's no replacement. So that principle applies there. Just then, Honorable Chair, a few things that are going to change, which are part of the marching orders. One, the translation of CI targets into outputs, because I think previously, CI will come here, perform at a 4. VSPOL, ORS, detectives, they perform at a 2. It doesn't reconcile. So the performance management system is now going to reconcile that. But 2, the operatives also are going to be held accountable for the value of intelligence, because we spend money to generate those products. Now we're going to hold them accountable. We're also going to be working on a system. Also, for information, you spoke about the CIOs that they've been reinstated, but Interpol has been shifted back to CI because it was once moved to DPCI. I don't know how, but it's back to CI. I don't want to say who, but I only want to say it was moved, and I took a decision to move it, that is back. And CI is at the front line of the OFTA strategy. The top 15 syndicates, they are actually leading that particular part. And the turnaround and the reorganization will also include the turnaround of CI. And the divisional commissioner is going to operationalize the organizational turnaround strategy. One of the key critical analysis capacity that we're going to be developing within CI within a short space of time is deep web capacity analysis within and then CI. And lastly, Honorable Chair, I heard the Honorable Member say we are so used not to have intelligence. And I was just going to say the response lies in Helen Keller. Just when the caterpillar thought the world was over, it became a butterfly. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Members. Is there any other questions? Doesn't seem like it, Honorable Mbele.
Thanks, Chair. It's a very small budget question, and I may possibly be wading into the dark forest. But I just want to check, are the budgeting for the either leasing or purchase of safe houses, is that reflected anywhere in this budget, or does that form part of the Secret Service Fund? Okay, then it's a moot question, because, yeah.
I thought I actually had something nice to say,
yeah,
which I thought I might as well say. I'm so impressed at the balance this year, where for once we've got the IP protection, which is basically the amounts a lot less. I mean, we've seen years where it's gone up more than anything else, and everyone was horrified in the whole country. I mean, really, do the fat cats need more protection? And I think the balance this year is one of the best I've ever seen in a budget. So whoever that is, that would be you, I guess. You take all the credit, although you probably did it. I don't know who did it, but I think it's for the first time in a very long time. I think it's just well done. If I'd seen VIP protection again getting all the money, I would have gone hysterical. So well done. Thank you.
Remember, they must still present tomorrow, so don't
not
count. Yeah,
tomorrow.
Let's first see what they present. Yeah. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Thank you, General Sitole, also General Jacobs. I think what we will do, we will give General Jacobs an opportunity maybe to come back towards the end of June. You know, he's then got some 2 months and then maybe give an update of the turnaround strategy.
Yeah.
I think that would be maybe the correct route to go. So thank you very much, members. We will start tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Tomorrow morning, I think, in the same V227. And we will start with Program 3, Detective Services, as well as the DPCI. We'll also present tomorrow, and then Program 5 will be the final program on Thursday. Thank you very much, members. This meeting is adjourned. Yeah, Friday is IPET and Civilian Secretariat. Yeah, I think you did well. Very well. The list, the betting list. You must just keep it.
Yeah.
The pilot is yesterday's betting list.
Yeah.
Take advantage of you.
Yes.
So I have to open my. Shoot my computer by taking this off.
What have you done now?
It's the betting.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't reach off such a long meeting.
Yeah.